Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities. Real advice. Real places, products, and businesses. Real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazines, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Best Ever You Show. We've got a great show lined up for you for the next hour. We have author Alexandra Anka with us. She's the author of the Total Food Allergy Health and Diet Guide. Really, really, really excited to have her with us, and we'll bring her in with us in a minute. I think a lot of you know that I have food allergies. I got them in as an adult. I was not born with them or anything like that. And I have a book coming out. I've been recently signed with Hay House. And I have a book coming out called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. And in it, we're going to be detailing, you know, some food allergies and things like that. But my personal experiences with nearly losing my life on especially two occasions from allergic reactions to almonds and walnuts. So this topic is near and dear to my heart, if you can't hear it in my voice, you know, having barely lived through some food allergic reactions, this is very, very important. So, Alexandra Anka, I just want to welcome you first. Hello, hello, how are
you?
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm just, it's an honor to have you with us. This is neat, you're a registered dietitian and nutritional consultant. Oh, how I have wished for you over the years. I cannot tell you how hard it is to be, you know, to be diagnosed with something and then to navigate through how to stay healthy with something like that. Probably very similar to being diabetic or, you know, food allergies. You really have to avoid certain foods, and it can be tricky to stay healthy when everybody's saying, oh, eat nuts, eat fish oil, eat flaxseed, and all this stuff to stay healthy. And you're like, I'm allergic. So I don't know what I'm going to eat. But you have expertise in, love this too, weight management, women's health, hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, osteoporosis. You seem like you're almost a women's health expert. Is that accurate?
To some extent, my passion is for specialized diets such as a gluten-free diet and diets for treating food allergies, because just like you said, if you never have a nutrition education and expertise, it is a very steep learning curve. Once you're diagnosed with food allergies, and like I mentioned, celiac disease is very similar in how accurate you need to be and how stringent you need to be in avoiding gluten from all sources. And so I'm dedicated to helping people sift through that information, and I almost wish I could take everyone by the hand to help them in that first initial time just after diagnosis, to try to find the foods that are safe for them, and then the next step being how to live healthy on an allergen exclusion diet, if I can call it that way.
Oh, yeah, that's a great thing, because sometimes, you know, like me, I'll get into little ruts, I like to call them, where I'm like, okay, well, I know I'm not allergic to this chocolate ice cream, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's not what somebody like you wants to hear. That's not healthy. But you know, it's like something that'll keep you alive if you eat it, as opposed to something else. And it can be very scary, just even going out to eat or going over to somebody's house, going to a party, going to, you know, eating birthday cake. You know, it's kind of a very scary world. It's kind of like living in fear a lot of the time. And I'm so getting
exactly.
a grip on
and
it.
There are times and times again, studies show us that those who live with food allergies and celiac disease have a higher level of stress and anxiety. And the burden of having to, especially those who have to deal with anaphylactic, that burden of the fear of having an anaphylactic shock really decreases the quality of life. However, what tends to happen, and I'm not so sure that it happens more in those individuals for whom the allergy has developed in adulthood, but certainly for children who are allergic, the nuclear family, the family unit, tends to be much tighter and much closer. because everyone tends to be involved in the well-being of that child. When you develop food allergies as an adult, you need to take action and be proactive and involve, bring in the family so that they understand what the consequences of you ingesting the most minute amount of that allergen, what that would do to you and what the consequences of that would be. And so you need to educate your family and bring them into drafting an anaphylaxis emergency document and showing them, explaining to them exactly why is it that you need separate pots, why do you need to label the jars of different foods with your name to make sure that there's no cross-contamination.
Oh, yeah, and I hear you loud and clear on that one. As I'm a mom of four boys, and they've grown up with me having food allergies. So they are so overly cautious, you know, with granola bars, cereal, you know, could even be ice cream. I tend to really get sick around things that are more dusty in nature, as opposed to, you know, like I know I can avoid eating Rocky Road ice cream. You know, I know not to eat that. The nuts are very clearly in there. But it's
right.
Like if somebody eats a, you know, people know not to do this around me, but if somebody were to eat a bag of almonds, say, and then, you know, plant a big kiss on me, that could be deadly.
Exactly.
Very scary. But, you know, it's let's go through this a little bit more structured so people can really have a great takeaway with this show. I know I was really excited to have you here today. I think what I want to tell people, if you can help me tell people, is food allergies exist. It's not something that we're drumming up in our head to, you know, be drama or anything like that. They really affect people. And it's as many as like 1 in 13 children now or some amazing statistic like that have food allergies?
Well, we do know from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that from 1997 to 2007, there has been an 18% rise in food allergies in the United States in children under the age of 18. And we are looking for the Western countries, we're looking at many as 5 to 6% of young children being affected by food allergies and as many as 3 to 4% of adults being affected by food allergies in the Western world. So there's no doubt that the incidence of food allergies is on the rise. And there are many theories as to why that may be.
Yeah, and you said from 1997 to 2007, under 18, it's how much of a percent? That's just wild.
18%.
Like,
almost 20%.
Wow. And do they have any idea what's causing? I saw in the news the other day there was something like they're showing that people have a higher level of pesticides in them. Or, you know, who knows? Did you hear that? That was so interesting.
Yes, I did. I read the study, and the problem with that is there's not a cause and effect. In other words, the study did not show that there is a link between or that pesticides may cause food allergies, but it gave us a reason to delve further into the topic and to maybe see whether pesticides, particularly when they're consumed by a pregnant woman, whether those pesticides do cross the placenta and whether they weaken the immune system of the fetus and later on the infant. There's a number of hypotheses and theories as to why food allergies are on the rise in the Western world. One of the most commonly cited ones is called the hygiene hypothesis. This idea that we live in a super clean environment, that our level of cleanliness has increased, and so we don't give our immune systems a chance to fight off and deal with viruses and bugs of all kinds. And that actually weakens the immune system. Another one is the abuse almost of antibiotics, where they're being prescribed for viral infection that the body should be able to handle on its own. It might help us with symptoms of viral infections, but it actually weakens the immune system. And studies show that children who are exposed to a wider range of viral infections tend to develop stronger immune systems. And so for every food protein that's out there or protein that is in the environment, our immune system now tend to overreact. And this may be one of the reasons why we are seeing this rise in food allergies.
Interesting. Yeah, I developed mine after pregnancy. Right after pregnancy, yeah, just absolutely my whole body chemistry changed. But my children do not have food allergies. So I had one baby and then a second baby, then got food allergies and had two more children. And really nobody has food allergies at all. And just me.
Fantastic.
And that it was a very interesting pregnancy. The whole time I craved peanut butter and shrimp. And now I am allergic to those things in an anaphylactic way. I was going to tell you that I shoot the hygiene theory all down, because living with five boys.
Right, and you probably would. And then my next question would have been, are there allergies in your family? Because allergies, of course, are genetic in nature, and
no,
you would need to have the genetic predisposition for that.
Yeah, no, there really aren't. It's me, and I'm in the middle of many, many children and so forth, and it just seems like something went a little off during a pregnancy. I just, very strange. One, you know, I always ate nuts and lobster and, you know, you name it, shrimp and everything my whole life, and then it was like a light switch went.
It just hit you. Wow.
Yes,
and during pregnancy, pregnancy takes a lot of energy from the body as you're creating life. And the immune system is being challenged, if at all, after the pregnancy and shortly after delivery. If your immune system is weak, it's probably fertile ground for any overreaction to happen, which is what food allergies are. It's an overreaction, a very strong reaction of the immune system to proteins that are typically harmless or normally harmless, but in your case, they became toxic.
And
so it might have been sort of a perfect storm where a weakened immune system made way for sensitization to those particular proteins that you're allergic to, I believe the almonds and the shrimp, the tree nuts and the shrimp.
Well, you know, I think of all the moms with all the little kids with the food allergies and so forth, and I think of all the different ways that people want to educate, prevent, learn new treatments, you know, anything that they can to help, you know, get over food allergies. There are a couple of things that I've heard that I'm just wondering if we could get your thoughts on, because I know there's lots of moms that are listening right now. One would be desensitization, you know, like injecting a little peanut here and there, you know, and desensitizing to the allergen. And then the other one I've heard lately is that people with food allergies might be missing a digestive enzyme. Have you heard of either of those two things?
So the sensitization treatment is actually something that is being applied right now, and it's something that is starting to gain almost mainstream momentum. It used to be experimental in nature, but there have been great advances into how often the small amount of, say, peanut allergen is being applied to the child and gaining that sensitization or the tolerance for it. And certainly you'll never be able to tolerate a full amount or a larger amount of peanut, but even small amounts can make a huge difference into issues such as cross-contamination and the chance of tolerance for even small amounts of peanuts, or whether it's dairy protein, for example, is making huge gains, both from a patient perspective, because it's very helpful, but also from the medical field as well. As far as the lack of digestive enzymes, I would tend to link that more to food sensitivities as opposed to food allergies, because food intolerances or food sensitivities typically involves the lack of the ability to digest and break down certain proteins, such as, or even in the case of lactose intolerance, sugars in foods. And so that may apply to food sensitivity, as opposed to food allergies. The one thing that, the one theory that right now is being looked at for prevention of food allergies is actually probiotic. Because, of course, the gut is probably the largest immune system or the largest component of your immune system. And so what we're finding is that in the case of food allergies or something like celiac disease, the junctions that make up the gut lining tend to be leaky. In other words, they let huge proteins or whole proteins to make it through. And this is what triggers the immune system. This is what causes a sensitization. And so probiotics, particularly early in life, tend to make the lining of the intestine a healthy one and tighten those junctions. And they may be the answer to prevention of food allergies and all kinds of other allergies in the future.
That's really important that you mention that, because I notice that too. Like if I eat yogurt or have like a little serving of yogurt every day, I'm not allergic to milk or whey, so I can pretty much tolerate yogurt. And I do notice I can't eat it every day, but I, you know, if I have it every once in a while, I just notice that I feel better.
Right. Yes. Well, it might be the dose of probiotics, although yogurts have small amounts of probiotics compared to probiotics in supplements. So we're talking about 1 billion active bacterial cultures per serving, as opposed to in a supplement it can be as high as 10, 50, or 450 billion active bacterial cultures per dose.
That's a lot of yogurt.
So, yes, but, you know, small doses on a regular basis certainly add up, and they help to replenish the healthy bacteria in the gut because, again, the microbiome or the bacterial environment of your gut is not a stable thing. In fact, you shed a lot of the lining of your intestine every time you go to the washroom. So every bowel movement. So replenishing that bacterial culture with things like yogurt or a small dose of a probiotic is extremely important to make sure you colonize the gut with healthy bacteria as opposed to the not so healthy kind.
I think one of my biggest concerns with food allergies, I think we talked about the difference between a true food allergy and a true food sensitivity. A true food allergy is going to send you in 911 mode. I think that's the best way to explain that. A food allergy means your life is in jeopardy, and you need to react fast, respond fast, and dial 911. Do you want to add to that? And carry epinephrine and Benadryl.
Of course. So food allergies, again, are a very strong and unexpected reaction of the immune system. And one who gets diagnosed with food allergies has to, there's a number of considerations that you'd have to look at. Not only carry epinephrine, but make sure that you avoid that food allergen, both in the food that you eat, but in cross-contamination. We talked about cross-contact, such as touching doorknobs and tables. Kissing is another example of cross-contact. Even when you're sitting next to a person who has, say, a bag of peanuts, opening that bag of peanuts and having the peanut dust almost, if it penetrates and if it gets into your airways, it can definitely trigger an allergic reaction.
Can I stop you right there? Can I add right there? Because you just mentioned something that I still don't think the airline industry fully comprehends. Because for those people with nut allergies, they say, oh, okay, well, we don't serve peanuts on board. Well, that's not enough. It's anybody with peanuts or nuts. So, like, if you're on an airplane and you're allergic to peanuts or nuts, and they're going to dish out, you know, little bags of trail mix or mixed nuts, that could potentially send somebody with a nut allergy, especially me, into anaphylaxis in mid-flight. It's terribly dangerous. And they think they've got it covered with peanuts, but it's all nuts, really, because that, like you said, that dust gets into the air, and you're recirculating that air, and it's deadly. I've nearly died on board flights. I mean, seriously, very scary flying.
Did they let you carry an EpiPen on board with you, or did they say they have an EpiPen on?
No, I carry epinephrine with me at all times, and I have a doctor's note for it. And I always go through the screening very fine. I let them know. I say, hey, I've got epinephrine for food allergies in my purse. It's in the bottom. There's two pens there, and I have Benadryl over here, and I have to carry this with me. So, you know, it's
right.
If somebody said to me, you can't get on board with that, I'd say, well, I guess I'm taking the bus. You know, I there's no way in the world I'd ever fly without that. But the other thing you said was cross-contamination, and I really want to talk about food labels for a minute.
Absolutely.
You want to do that? I'll be quiet since you're the guest.
No, that's fine. I mean, what has happened, and this being, a difference in countries and labeling legislation in Canada and the U.S., in Canada, we've just passed on August 4th of this year new labeling legislation where all top 10 food allergens are required to be named on the label. In the U.S., the number of allergens is up to 8. Certainly cross-contamination is something that can be identified in a may-contain statement. This is called a precautionary label. I'm not sure how stringent it is in the U.S., but in Canada it has very clear guidelines for what can be named under what can be considered a may-contain or a precautionary label.
I was so much more comfortable with food allergies in Canada than I was in the United States. When I went to Canada, I was like, wow, they've got it down. It's labeled. It's there. You know it. Here, it feels like sort of a crapshoot in a way. It doesn't feel mandatory. I don't know why, but it seems to be at the discretion of the food company. Do you know if that's accurate or not? It doesn't seem like it's mandatory.
Well, I know in Canada that it's mandatory to put the precautionary label for food allergens, though it is mandatory for both Canada and the U.S. that manufacturers need to list their top 8 or top 10.
Because I noticed some things. Like I grabbed a box of granola the other day from a grocery store, and it was free and clear of all nuts. I went home and I ate it, and I ate a bowl of it, and I was so sick, and I'm like, you know, I am the canary in the coal mine here. This definitely has nuts in it, and it's not labeled. So I didn't know if it was a mistake or what, or if it's not mandatory or what. But, you know, I've noticed in the United States that when you go to some places like a rest area, for example, you know, like you're driving on the road and you go pick up food around, they'll put a blanket statement that says, if you have food allergies, please note that all 8 food allergens are in full swing here at this establishment, so eat at your own choosing.
At your own risk.
Yeah, and that doesn't help anybody with food allergies. It's like, it's not, you go in and it's not specifically labeled between all the different choices. That doesn't appear very helpful. While it appears to sort of lawyerly be a catch-all, so if somebody doesn't
exactly.
get sick, you know, they
and
warned you.
And typically with precautionary labels, it's always been the case where the sufferer, whether you have, and it's the same for celiac disease and for food allergies, whether that precautionary label was there to mitigate any potential liability on behalf of the company for, not doing their due diligence and checking for sources of cross-contamination and so on. Where it becomes really dangerous is if there is a gluten-free or an allergen-free label on the front of the package, and then the precautionary label on the back of the package states, this product is manufactured in a facility or on a line that also processes, and then it lists the number of allergens.
Yep.
And that is truly misleading and needs to be reported in your case to the FDA, in our case to Health Canada.
Yeah, I did report it. So I just noticed lots of things, it is what it is. But I also notice in the U.S. sometimes you'll see, like, I'll pick on ice cream. You'll see the ingredients will have it. It'll say, like, peanut oil. And if you're not really carefully reading that, they've listed the allergen, but then they don't have a separate allergen statement. So
they
it's
don't.
In the ingredients.
Yes, and that should be, well, that's probably in the U.S. It should be enough that if they identify the allergen in the ingredient, that they don't need to list it again in brackets or in a separate statement.
So here's where
in Canada, we list it both either in the brackets right after the ingredient, or we list it in a contained statement at the end of the ingredient list.
Awesome. Yeah. And here's where I'm kind of going with this, if you want to follow me for a minute. I noticed you're a nutritionist and dietitian and so forth, so you know food inside and out. And one of the things that I've really learned to do with food allergies now for, gosh, I don't know, since 1997, now, that's how long I've been maneuvering through food allergies with not very much guidance at the beginning. I mean, I've had some near-death experiences trying to navigate through food allergies. And what I've sort of learned is correct me here, feel free to interrupt me or tell me to be quiet, but I've learned to eat very clean. I'm a huge fan of, for example, Toscarino and her Eat Clean diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're eating... A lot of people with food allergies go, oh, I can't eat granola bars or candy or cookies or cake or ice cream or all this stuff. Well, it's not good for you anyway. And if you've got food allergies, you in taking the best possible care you can of yourself, I think we want to eat with no ingredients we have to read, if possible.
I see what you mean. I think a lot of people, and you're perfectly right, to the extent that you have the time to prepare everything from scratch.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are craving, and those with food allergies are no, or celiac disease are no different than the rest of us who don't, or the rest of the population who doesn't have to deal with food allergies. They still crave the same convenience and the same ease of being able to pick up something off the shelf, eat it without having to worry about it.
Yeah.
And certainly they have the same stressors in life and time stressors that maybe they're not organized enough to prepare meals ahead of time and freeze them in portions so that they can easily reheat them when they're at home. And so I think this is a reason behind this need to have packaged products that are allergen-free, maybe not nutritionally dense or nutritionally beneficial, but at least it's a convenience factor that that is otherwise robbed away from the person who has to deal with food allergies.
Well, here in the U.S., I can barely go through the grocery store and go into the granola bar aisle and find anything I could ever eat. I cannot find anything without nuts.
Typically, those kind of foods would probably be found at health food stores or specialty food stores because most manufacturers of allergen-free foods are small manufacturers and typically very specialized.
Yeah, I love those. There's a company that's really doing a lot with sunflower seeds. They make a sunflower butter. I can't remember the name of it, but there's
sun
there's
butter.
Yes,
it's sun butter, and it's just plain sunflower seeds. There's no additives at all, and it's a great substitute for peanuts. And tree nuts, and it's safe in schools as well. I'm not sure if you have that company in the U.S., but there's another one that makes a soy butter. It's called Wow Butter. And again, it's made from soy and no peanuts and no tree nuts. So it's certainly safe for school-age children as well.
Yeah, and I keep looking for a really good source of chocolate that has no nuts in it at all because, you know, that's really hard to find. You know, you can't just go out anymore and eat almond bark or, you know, anything that anything made in a candy store very easily. And so I've been looking for chocolate chips and things like that don't have nuts in them. And I think there's a lot of people who do. But we're talking a lot about nuts and tree nuts and peanuts because those seem to be the real common, especially the peanut allergy. That's probably the number one thing that people have. But now I know this, but just so you can educate our audience, what are the top 10 food allergies? What are the top 10 foods that people are allergic to? And if you want to go beyond 10 to some other sketchy characters in the food world, go ahead.
Right. Well, there's a few things that I want to mention. First of all, that there are as many as 270 foods that could potentially trigger allergic reactions. We refer to the top 10, or in the U.S., the top 8, as those food allergens that are responsible for 90% of all reported allergic reactions. And so the top 10 in Canada are peanuts and tree nuts, fish and shellfish or seafood, milk, egg, soy, wheat, sesame seeds, and this is where the extra two that are different from the U.S. are, mustard and sulfite. Now, sulfites are not do not cause an IgE-mediated reaction per se. They're more of a sensitivity, but they do the reaction they do trigger when they're in concentration of higher than 10 parts per million in a food, they do trigger allergic-like reaction or allergic-like symptoms, but not a true IgE-mediated allergy. Now, in Europe, they have an extra allergen, and it's celery or celeria. And the celery seed is also considered a top allergen in that part of
that's
the world.
I'm absolutely dead allergic to celery. It is an anaphylactic reaction.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
And then you have under the spectrum of food hypersensitivities, that includes, of course, food allergies, food sensitivities, you also have something called chemical sensitivities. And these are, again, adverse reactions or allergic-like reactions, although not IgE-mediated per se, to things like caffeine and coffee or tyramine or histamine in aged cheeses. The flavor enhancer MSG is another classic example of a chemical sensitivity. And many people report reactions to them, but they're not enough many people report them to consider them top allergens, and this is why they're not included in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, and that's really great information. And for somebody listening, you're saying IG something or other, and I'm sure people are like, what's that mean?
So IgE refers to the immunoglobulin E, which is an antibody that is responsible for all the allergic type symptoms that you experience during an allergic reaction. So it is responsible for symptoms such as swelling of the skin, itchy eyes and watery eyes. It's responsible for the anaphylactic reaction. Our immune system is the army that defends our bodies from things that are toxic. And so it has different infantries. So IgE or antibody of the type IgE is responsible for taking care of this overreaction of the immune system, recognizing what is toxic. IgA are a different type of antibody that reside mostly in the gut, and so they are responsible for or associated with the autoimmune disease called celiac disease. We also have other antibodies such as IgG antibodies, and those two are actually meant to suppress the immune system from overreacting when the food are recognized as safe. There's many, many kinds of antibodies, but this is IgE is a type of antibody that's associated with allergic reactions.
Yeah, what happens to me when I have an allergic reaction is my blood pressure goes all the way down to incredibly dangerous levels, and then all digestive system failure. I mean a complete and total digestive system failure. And so, I mean, and it's within minutes of even...
A
minute of eating it. The last, so I had the last really, well, they're all life-threatening, but I mean ones where even I was like, oh, God, I'm scared kind of thing. Because some of them, I'll have an allergic reaction. I'll go, okay, this one, you can kind of tell I'm going to live through this. I just need a little Epi and a little Benadryl, and I'm good to go, hopefully. You can just tell. I don't know. If you have enough of them, you know. But there were two in particular in my life, one when I was pregnant with our third child. I was visiting Minnesota, and my mom... We didn't know totally what I was allergic to yet, and my mom gave me a chocolate chip cookie with walnuts in it. Bless her heart, she didn't know, I didn't know, nobody knew, and I ate that cookie, and within a minute, I was absolutely fighting for not only my life, but my son's life. And you can't just shoot somebody who's pregnant up with epinephrine or anything like that, so it was very, very scary. And it followed a week-long hospital stay at Fairview in Burnsville, Minnesota. So, you know, I just want to really make sure that people understand how to save someone's life. Before we go there, I want to just talk about your book one more time because we're at the halfway mark. We're speaking with Alexandra Anka. She's the author of The Total Food Allergy Health and Diet Guide, and we're just about to go into the part about saving somebody's life who has a food allergic emergency. And I know we've talked about 911. We've talked about carrying epinephrine. If it's the first time somebody's having an allergic reaction, they might not have epinephrine on them. Call 911. Benadryl has saved my life, so epi and Benadryl. And then also there's this thing on my left wrist called a Medic Alert. I'm one of the spokespeople internationally for Medic Alert Foundation. And I've got this thing on my wrist, and it's a bracelet, and it identifies a number of medical conditions, whether it's, you know, if somebody has diabetes or Alzheimer's or whatever, but in my case, it's for food allergies. Do you know much about Medic Alert? Do you want to, and all of...
Well, it's not something that I address, only that in the book anyway, but it's something that I mention as part of managing an apoplectic reaction. So by all means, please go ahead and let us know. I know in Canada there's Medic Alert offices, and many, many of my patients wear the Medic Alert bracelet. And we also recommend that for those who have food allergic reactions and they have been diagnosed, so this is not... The first reaction that they actually carry two, you mentioned it at one point, two doses of epinephrine, two EpiPens, because in many cases, the first dose does not work all that well, and there's no contraindication for the use of more epinephrine or for the use of epinephrine.
Yeah, and I've noticed with subsequent exposures to allergens, the allergic reaction gets worse. Oh, it's just terrible. One of the last times somebody, I had almond in my food, I didn't know it, and the first near-death experience I had was two almonds. The second time almonds came near me, I just nearly died, and you're right, one dose of epinephrine wasn't enough. I don't know how many it took, actually, because I was out of it at the hospital. But it was quite a few, I think, and quite a lot of...
Very
Benadryl,
scary.
Quite a lot of Solumedrol and whatever else they hang to pump water through you and clear the allergen out and so forth. But Medic Alert, if anybody doesn't know what that is, go to medicalert.org. Again, it's for any medical condition that you might have, but it was actually started and founded because someone had food allergies. So they know a lot about food allergies there. And it's something you can wear around your wrist, around your neck. They have sports bands. They have fancy schmancy ones. I've got kind of a real thick chain one on my wrist because I'm pretty hard on my jewelry. And they're a great group of people. And basically what it is, if you're having an allergic reaction, or let's say you have a child with an allergic reaction and they're not near you or they're in college or, you know, it speaks for you when you can't speak for yourself. And the emergency responders are trained to look where your pulse is for this emergency jewelry. Especially, I know in Canada, when you call 911, they actually ask you if you're a Medic Alert member. So, you know, it's very serious, but if you flip the front of the bracelet is kind of like a snake almost. It's snake. It says Medic Alert, and then you turn it over, and like mine says anaphylaxis to multifoods, iodine x-ray dye, and then you have a number, and the medical staff, like Alexander, somebody came in through your ER and they weren't able to talk and you saw this, would you call Medic Alert?
I would call Medic Alert, and then they'd be able to identify you, the person, and all your contact information and vital information.
Yeah, it saved my life a couple times. So really, really good information. What a great phone call to help people with their food allergies. I'm very curious as we continue on here into all the detail. We probably could have gone for 2 hours, Alexandra. I forgot what I was going to say because I'm cracking jokes here. You know, it's not supposed to be funny, but what made you do this? I'm very curious how you and Dr. Sussman got in. Do you have a child with food allergies, or what got you so interested in food allergies? Just personal.
Well, I have been doing for the past 10 years a lot of work with the Canadian Celiac Association, and I had worked with patients with celiac disease, but more importantly, was very much involved with something called the Pocket Dictionary, which is an alphabetical list of food and food ingredients that are allowed, not allowed, or questionable in the gluten-free diet. And having been through a lot of allergists as well as gastroenterologists, I got to see, and to part of my patient base became people with food allergies, and so I recognized that they had the same needs and the same difficulties as those with celiac disease. And Dr. Gordon Sussman, has been an allergist in Toronto for the past 30 years. He is actually a second-generation allergist. He is one of the founders of Anaphylaxis Canada. And he and I started working together, and I had asked him to help me out with this book, because part of the aisle-by-aisle guides that are described in the book is the idea that came from a previous book that I had written on the gluten-free diet. And it's, again, that idea to take the person by the hand and walk them through the grocery store and point out to some of the foods that are most likely to be safe for them given the food allergy that they have. And so Dr. Sussman was gracious enough, to verify the content of the medical section of the book. And he is also a fellow of the American Academy of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. And I did the nutrition part, where I made sure that I looked not only into what food ingredients need to be avoided, but also how do you fill in the nutritional requirements once you have to avoid not just certain foods, but sometimes entire food groups. When you think about something like dairy, allergy to dairy protein, how do you replace the calcium and vitamin B and so on? And so the book has come from this desire to help people who are newly diagnosed with a food allergy and for whom, like I said, the learning curve for finding out what is safe and what is unsafe. Just sometimes even reading the ingredient list it takes forever because you don't understand some of the ingredients. Trying to help them to make sense of it all and to bring back life to a certain normal level as it was before, and teaching them how to, or helping them find out a way to deal and live with food allergies that is positive. So instead of focusing on what you cannot have, focus on what you can have and know how to avoid the dangerous situation.
Yeah, it's tricky. I've even had problems with vitamins. I mean, Alexandra, if you can design a vitamin that I can actually consume, I think it's worth a prize. Because
on the market.
Oh, I can't find one because, sometimes eggs bug me. Sometimes I'm definitely allergic to seafood. I'm definitely allergic to nuts. And so what I do is somebody will just casually say, you go to the doctor and they'll say, oh, well, you're out of vitamin D. You need a vitamin D supplement. And you can't find one that doesn't have shellfish.
Or omega-3 fatty acids. So for patients with, and this is what I talk about in the book, and this is why all the recipes, all the 150 recipes in the book are free of all allergens, including gluten and corn, because I've had the honor of helping a mother, whose family was allergic to different members of the family was allergic to different foods, and so she was never able to cook one meal for the entire family. And so this is what prompted me to write the book, but I'm sort of jumping, and I apologize for this, to get back to your question about vitamin D, omega-3 fatty acids are extremely important, especially for young children and for growth and brain development. But if you have an allergy to fish and shellfish, The difficulty is finding an omega-3 fatty acid supplement that is free of fish, because those are the best sources of omega-3 fatty acids. And so we typically look at alternatives such as nuts and seeds, for example, but if you have an allergy to nuts, there you go, you cannot have them. Other alternatives, if they're not contaminated, are seeds or things like flax, canola, and chia seeds. And again, you have to look for a supplement, for a source that is that does not contain any cross-contamination with nuts.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you've got the recipes right in the back of this book. If I was going to describe how I cook, it's pretty much exactly like this to stay alive and be food allergy free. And a lot of people say to me, oh, don't eat potatoes. They have such a high glycemic index. And I'm like, you don't understand. I live on them. It's how I survive. There's just certain things that I have to eat. Mm-hmm. One thing I've learned that I absolutely love, once you find what you can eat and navigate through,
mm-hmm.
I love tacos. I have, like, no problem for some reason with Mexican food, like
with
peppers and, you know, all the spices and things like that. I don't know why, but it's
mm-hmm.
just really interesting. But this has, to anybody listening, this book has such wonderful recipes. And when she says they are free of all the allergens, they are free of all the allergens. I mean, there isn't maybe a few, like, I'm cautious with coconut. I'm pretty cautious
right,
with coconut.
Right, yes, I know you would be. And in the U.S., coconut is listed under a tree nut, even though it's not.
Genetically,
it's not. And in Canada, it is not. But patients need to know and speak to their allergy specialist about what's called a cross-reaction. And particularly amongst tree nuts, there is a high prevalence of cross-reaction. So if you're allergic, say, to almonds, you may also be allergic to other tree nuts, such as macadamia nuts, pistachios, and so on.
Yeah. And what about the – this always seems silly to me, but is very true. I can hardly eat a banana. You would think a banana would be the best thing, but boy, when I eat a banana, I get hives and I itch and my throat itches and my mouth itches, and it's very strange. And at one point, an allergist said, oh, there's cross contaminations with fruits. Like sometimes a lot of people aren't anaphylactic, they don't have anaphylaxis to fruit, but they'll get itchy mouth or itchy throat.
Right, and that is called the oral allergy syndrome. Where the reactions are localized, actually, to just the mouth. So there's tingling around the mouth, the lips tend to swell up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is known also as a pollen food allergy syndrome. So if you have allergy to pollen, such as grass and ragweed, you may respond in a similar fashion to proteins and fruits and vegetables. So examples of this cross-reaction, for example, in the case of an allergy to birch pollen, you would cross-react, so you would have this oral allergy syndrome type of reaction to almonds, apple, apricot, Brazil nuts, carrots, coconut even, fennel, hazelnut, kiwi, and the list goes on. It's about 15
foods long. That sounds like me.
That's
my critter right there.
Probably. And bananas, too, are actually, there is an anaphylactic reaction to banana, believe it or not. It does contain an allergen. But it can be a cross-reaction, or is this a cross-reaction to ragweed pollen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're reactive to ragweed.
Yeah, I've got some seasonal allergies. Like when I go back to the Midwest, you get those. But, you know, a lot of people have that. They just, you know, they think nothing of it. And then, like my mom was saying the other day, wow, my throat itches after eating that. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's
this is what it is. It's the oral allergy syndrome. And the one way to deal with it is typically the kind of proteins that are found in these foods that cross-react with the environmental allergen are labile to heat, or they're sensitive to heat. So if you cook them, you'd be able to tolerate them.
Yeah, like I can cook a carrot.
So if you, instead of eating a fresh apple, you would have a baked apple. you'd be able, you will not be feeling the same tingling and itching and so on.
I'm thinking of me always making apple pie. Well,
there
good apples one way or the other. It's in the form of apple pie. But I noticed that too.
Either
like
way, you'll be
it.
Able to enjoy it. But yes, it is a it is a condition, so it has to be recognized. But it's not very often spoken
yeah.
of or commented on.
Yeah. Let's. What would you like to talk about? Just to be cautious on time here. Let me check time and let's just make sure that we've got about 10 minutes.
Left.
Yeah. Wow. We can go a little bit longer. I can't go the full, you know, we could, if you want to, or we can go, you know, we've got some control of the time. I just didn't know if you wanted to go that long with talking to me 2 hours on the phone, you know, so it's a long time, but if it's, you know, if this is helpful to people, which I think it is because people are tweeting us and talking to us while we're on here, asking questions.
Oh, great.
You know, I say we keep talking. What do you want to finish up with or continue on about? That we haven't talked about.
You know,
the one
thing that's on my mind right now as we enter the holiday season is what is one with food allergies and particularly, well, food allergies or celiac disease, what is one to do around the holidays? Because I think it's a touchy topic. We're celebrating Hanukkah and then we're celebrating Christmas. And these typically involve food and they typically involve someone else preparing the food for you, and how is it that that I can help? What sort of advice I might have for those people who do have to deal with family situations while they have a life-threatening anaphylactic reaction to food? So
let's use me as an example again. Here's a real life situation.
Go ahead.
My husband has some aging relatives, and he is Italian, and we were thinking about going to New Jersey to do Christmas Eve at his aunt and uncle's house, and they do every kind of seafood and every kind of fish and every kind of wine known to mankind. I can't even smell those types of things, like be in the room with it, or I get sick. So now, what do you say? What do you do? And so forth. That's a real life situation.
There it is, and it's a tough one for sure. In the case of anaphylactic, which is what you have, anaphylactic reaction, I am always on the cautious side, so I always suggest that one would bring their own food, so one would bring his or her own food. So you would call the host ahead of time and ask them, let them know, be verbal and be proactive about your needs. Let them know that you do have food allergy to fish and shellfish and to tree nuts. And ask them if there is an alternative that they may consider, and also ask them and let them know that you'll be bringing your own food. Because at the end of the day, you want to enjoy the company, and you don't want to have, the fear of having to go through an anaphylactic reaction. And neither do they. They would have a lot more stress on
the
them
hospital.
If they knew. Exactly, and that's not worth it. That's not worth it for anyone.
It's not worth any bite of food ever to me. You know, and it's not only just fear. You mentioned fear, but it's embarrassment too. And yeah, it's family, and this isn't my family. The family I grew up with, they know me, and they've known me for years, and they know I have food allergies.
Right.
But I also don't live around them, so they don't know to what extent. So you know, they'll say, "Oh, have a cookie. It doesn't have any nuts in it." Have a cookie, and being on the receiving end of that, you're like, not a chance. No way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say that out loud.
And you have to be able to.
Thinking,
you probably have done this. Have learned to do this to not take it personally and not to let it get personal on them, to say, these are my food allergies. I could have an anaphylactic reaction. I'm sorry, I cannot take that.
Yeah. And that, what usually I'm really playing this out here because this really is real life and what's happened to me over the course of however many years I've had this. Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. I've made that for you. You know, it does. I checked the ingredients. I checked the ingredients. It doesn't. I looked just for you. I made this just for you so you could be here.
Right. Yes. Yes, I know. And that guilt trip is really not the last thing you want.
Yeah, and
but
and
it is something that you have to be assertive about and not
yeah.
explain to them that it's not personal. And
yeah.
you would love to enjoy it, but there's just too much risk involved in it.
Yeah. So
but here, you can. I brought you this cake. Would you like to try it?
You know what I always do?
If it's something that you can bring, that you've made and that's safe for you and for everybody else, and they can partake in your offering as well.
That is exactly what I do. You named it right there because you had a key word there called risk, and you've got, you know, with really and truly, I don't want to be an alarmist or anything like that, but when somebody else is cooking, whether it's at someone's house or at a restaurant, you don't have complete control over that food. You really don't know for sure what it has. So I always bring my own food. Always.
Excellent.
I bring
Excellent.
My own lasagna or whatever's going to fit in and not cause a huge fuss. And then I always bring my own plate of cookies that I can eat. So when everybody's sitting there eating pie and cakes and cookies and things like that, I know this one in this Tupperware over in that corner is mine. And so I'll go get one and I'll eat just like everybody else. And those are things I've learned to do. How do you make it safe though, as a mom with a little kid? You know, Aunt Edna's given the little kiddo a cookie and doesn't know. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like
that is a tough one. I typically, when I arrive with a child, I recommend that people arrive well ahead of dinner time. So there's no, you have the time to actually inform the host and everybody else who's there that your child has food allergies and please do not share foods, do not give them foods. It's also something that you teach your child. Do not accept. It's something that you have to start from day one. If you are being offered any food, you either refuse it, or if you do have it, you give it to me right away. So it's definitely part of the education has to happen on behalf of the child and part on behalf of the family and the family members that are
what about this?
That are at the party.
What about you got 20 people, family members, and they say, food allergies? What a bunch of malarkey. I've never heard of food. Nobody got food allergies. What's the response to that?
And then you give them a copy of my book. And they have to. This is part of the education to your extended family members once a diagnosis has been made. So there's no misunderstanding as to how serious the diagnosis of a food allergy is. And this is why I feel, both for the celiac community and those with food allergies, I feel for them because this talk of food sensitivities and, oh, I'm sensitive to this, or the whole gluten-free craze that's going on right now in North America, it sort of takes away from the seriousness of food allergic reactions and true celiac disease that are medical conditions and that are very, very serious. And it sort of takes away the spotlight from those and puts it to those who have just sensitivities, and those are not life-threatening situations.
Yeah. There's definitely a huge difference to ordering a salad and putting the dressing on the side, or ordering a salad and putting the gluten over there and doing, you know, that might be a diet and lifestyle choice or an intolerance choice. You know, I think of like Foofy California where you're, you know, dieting and you don't want to eat that or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And this is different. This is, if I eat that, there's a 90-10 shot. I'm going into the hospital for eating that. Not a 50-50. It's a 50-50 shot of living, but a 90% chance we're going to the hospital to try and get to the 50-50 mark. And when your book came across my desk, that's why you're here, because I was so moved. I'm like, finally, somebody has written something where I don't seem like I'm crazy. Because you seem like you're crazy to all your family members. They're like, a food allergy? Who in the heck has a food allergy? We don't have them. What will happen to you? You know, it's very, like, you know, people have heard of being diabetic or you know, having, you know, people have heard of these other things, and I think people are more and more starting to hear about food allergies. But this really spells it out. And makes it real.
Yes, and we need to raise awareness about the seriousness of food allergies. and not misunderstand what the consequences may be, and make people realize that the smallest minute amount of food can trigger a very life-threatening reaction, and it's not worth risking it.
Yeah, and does the blame, we'll keep going here. To those listening live, the show is going to cut off live, but it's still taping, so you can listen to the end of the show on replay. To those with, you just said something very important, that's the smallest amount of food can trigger a life-threatening reaction. Do you really mean the smallest amount of food? Like one peanut?
In parts per million.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, a bread of crumb can be enough to, sorry, a crumb of bread can be enough to trigger an allergic reaction to wheat. Or in your case with shellfish allergy, let's say you go to a restaurant and you order just grilled chicken, but the chicken has been grilled on a grill that has been previously used to grill shrimp.
Deadly.
The smallest in parts per million little bit of shellfish, if it ends up on your chicken breast, you will have an anaphylactic reaction. And there's nothing light about it.
Yeah, that's happened to me before. I completely get it, which is, let's go there. I skipped it before, but let's talk for a minute before we go about eating out. Because when you eat out, here's how it goes for me. I sit down and I say, hi, how are you? We're going to try and get me through this dinner, and life is going to need to be a choice here because I've got all my children and husband around. And I do kind of make it dramatic and say, I have anaphylactic shock. They look at me like, what's that? And I say, that means food allergies. And here's what I'm allergic to. I'm allergic to nuts. I'm allergic to all nuts, peanuts, fish, and shellfish. And that means my food can't touch any of that. And the eyes widen. I'll go get the manager is usually what follows.
Yeah, of course.
And can you explain why?
Well, here's the thing. We know there's been now two big studies, both in North America and the United Kingdom, about the attitude and knowledge of restaurant staff about food allergies. And what they found, and surprisingly very similar in both, was that restaurant managers, chefs, and servers had a very high opinion of their personal knowledge of food allergies, but it did not match their actual knowledge of food allergies. And, for example, individuals experiencing reactions, they thought that if they just drink some water, they can dilute the allergen, or simply removing the allergen. Let's say you have an allergy to wheat, and you order a Caesar salad, and it comes with croutons. Well, simply just removing those croutons from the salad will be enough to avoid the allergen. That is not the case. And what we need to do is speak up and speak to those people who actually prepare the food, so whether that is the chef, the sous chef, or the manager. In an ideal world, you would do your due diligence ahead of time and call the restaurant, speak to the manager or the chef in the times when it's not at the busiest. So during, you know, just after lunch and before dinner, you would even pay a visit to the restaurant if you know in advance what the restaurant is going to be, and actually ask them to give you a tour of the kitchen or talk to them about how they deal with issues of cross-contamination. If you don't have the time to do that, then you want to have to ask them to prepare all the food in fresh pans and utensils. So this means, you know, a sauteed chicken, for example, in a fresh pan, and all the utensils need to be clean. And a separate person handling the food, your food and your meal, compared to the rest of them. And, of course, hand washing is extremely important when preparing food for those who have allergies.
Yeah, and all of that right there is why I'm so skeptical to eat out. When we go out to eat, we'll go and we'll talk to the chef and say, look, I need a steak, green beans, and potato. And I need it prepared like that. I don't want it dunked or drowned in anything. I just need butter over here, pepper, fine, salt, fine, but don't do anything else to it, and cook it in its own pan and all these things.
Exactly.
And that makes for a nice evening out with my husband, and I'm alive at the end of it. Versus like one allergic reaction I had, we went through the drive-thru of a food chain, and I got what I thought I could eat, and, you know, thinking, okay, you know, how bad could a plain hamburger and fries be? Well, it turned out to be bad. They had run out of oil earlier that day, and somebody ran across the street to get some oil to fill the fryer up, and they mistakenly bought peanut oil.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so my French fries were cooked in peanut oil. No clue. So it's scary. You know, it's that life-threatening. And the thing of it is, on top of eating out, like we've lost a couple teens in the food allergic community eating out at food courts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of some of these names, and I won't mention them right now, but we lost a teenager, mm-hmm. a teenage girl eating at a food court and so forth. And their food courts are kind of dangerous sometimes. If you don't know...
Yeah, they are extremely dangerous.
For food allergies. I don't mean they themselves, you know, not to the normal person without food allergies. But
no, but for
food
those
allergies.
With food allergies and... Absolutely, and especially the teenage years are probably the riskiest time because
yeah.
peer pressure comes into play and all the social aspect of those teenage years. And in Canada, the... Anaphylaxis Canada organization has put together, and I know that FAN in the U.S. also has
mm-hmm.
this, a website just for teens, and it's called Why Risk It? And it talks about all sorts of issues that can come up for those adolescents that that deal with food allergies, including cyberbullying, for example, and how to deal with that, because there's certainly cases of bullying for those who suffer from food allergies. But also, you know, cross-contamination, going out. How do you make choices? How do you say no in a way that is that still maintains
pleasant.
Your social credibility amongst your peers but does not isolate you? Because that is a huge issue for children and growing adults, young adults, with food allergies.
And it seems a little bit easier for girls to carry the epi shots, but more difficult for boys. Where to put those epi shots? Like, I keep wanting to work with somebody to design an epi patch. I really just so desperately want to design. I don't know who I need to deal with to do that, but I want to put epi patches in wallets of boys, you know, just so, because they don't carry around the epinephrine and they don't carry around those pouchy things around their waist. And so
that's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, if you can help me, I would love to design an epi patch.
<Let's laughs>
I don't know how to do it or what to do, but boy, let's do it. That and a ton of other different things, some restaurant labeling and everything. Yeah, there's so many things that still need to be done with food allergies. And I just I know you're on time here, but I just want to make sure that we thank you for writing this book, because it's a heck of a great. It's not even a start. It's beyond a start because I've been dealing with this for so long, and I was looking through it, going, yep, 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 that's true, that's true, that's true, yep, 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 yep. And you wrote it in such a way that you almost, it seemed like, had food allergies yourself.
Oh,
and that's
yes.
from dealing with people. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'm very careful to be, and I want it to be as thorough as possible, because I know those with food allergies need all the information they can get.
Yeah,
all
and half
them.
The stuff I read, I go, that's not right. You know, I've got food allergies, and we don't do that. You know, there's a
mm-hmm.
lot of really, some really bad information.
It's a lot of misunderstanding.
Like, yeah. And this is really, I'm telling you, from I can't even add how long I've had food allergies, and really my book coming out, the Percolate book due out through Hay House, coming out, well, the first chapter of it, you know, really talks about some near-death experiences I've had with food allergies. And this really, folks, again, it's called The Total Food Allergy Health and Diet Guide by Alexandra Anka with Dr. Gordon L. Sussman, really nails it. It's just got everything you need, and then there's some great ways to eat and ideas in the back. And you do mention Medic Alert in here. I don't know if you know that or not, but on
yes,
163,
yes,
you got Medic Alert.
It's just a Canadian. It's a Canadian,
yeah.
I guess, office.
Yeah.
Or the Canadian arm of Medic Alert.
Yeah.
But yes, it is under Managing Anaphylaxis.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right, anything else before we go, and maybe you could come back again, you know, in a few months, and we could do a little update
Absolutely.
Like
I want
that.
To thank you for the opportunity to be on your show and to talk to you. I think you're a great resource yourself, and I applaud you for taking the word out and for raising awareness about food allergies. I think it's really, really important. And, you know, we need more people like you and more of these shows to talk about it, because this is how people learn about the importance of food allergies.
It's a tiny change. It's maybe hopefully something small we all can do that makes it bigger and
exactly.
And helps. And I really wanted to thank you. Really goes to you. It's a great book, and it's one as a person with anaphylaxis, I would pick it up and carry it around kind of like a little Bible, and it, really truly. And that's profound coming with somebody from somebody with food allergies, because a lot of it. And it's, and like you said earlier, it's one I would give to my family to finally educate them on what the heck's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you
mm-hmm.
know, I remember when I first had food allergies, my dad was like, there's something wrong. You're having, like, seizures. We're going to take you to the Mayo Clinic and find out what's wrong with you. This isn't mm-hmm. normal kind of thing. And it turned out to be food allergies. And the one thing we haven't talked about that I'm wondering if we can talk about before you go, or what are the signs that somebody is having either anaphylaxis or an allergic reaction. Can you go through that really fast? I could too, but it's better coming from you.
Well, I guess what we would need to talk about are the symptoms of anaphylaxis, and that would include things like hives, rashes and swelling, itches, changes in skin color, cold, clammy skin, tingling in the mouth, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea or cramps and or cramps, difficulty breathing or swallowing, dizziness or lightheadedness, and of course loss of consciousness, coma, or even death.
Blood pressure. Yeah, blood pressure drop. What usually
blood
happens,
pressure drop, yes.
Yeah. What usually happens to me, how I know I've eaten something I'm allergic to, is I get profoundly dizzy. I mean dizzy. And then my blood pressure tanks. And then it's followed by just incredible cramping and sickness and so forth, or profound dizzy, and then the throat closes. And so in all that what you said right there, if somebody eats something and they've got all of a sudden hives everywhere, and somebody goes, oh, no big deal, you've got hives.
Well, that is still an allergic reaction, and whether you need to take Benadryl, an antihistamine, or an EpiPen, just make sure you have both on you.
Okay. What's the difference between a 911 phone call and not? What point would you call 911?
Well, I would call 911 at any time that I experience an allergic reaction. If I start feeling that I'm out of breath, if my blood pressure drops, and if I feel dizzy or lightheaded.
Or chest pain. Yeah, anything like that. Good. Okay, well, good.
Or chest pain.
Anything just where it's a real weird feeling. You just don't feel right is the best way to explain it. You just feel like something's dramatically off. And I know in my case, I get so weak, there's no way I could dial 911 on my own.
So it's very scary. And this is where the family or the friend that you are with needs to know the anaphylactic emergency plan. And you need to share that information and help them or invite them to draft it together.
Yeah, or have that medical alert on.
Someone else needs to take over at that time when you're not able to make the call or to even know what you need to do next.
Yeah, definitely. All right, great. Well, thank you, Alexandra, for being with us. And again, everyone. Thank you. And happy holidays. And again, that's the
happy
total.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. And to everybody listening. That's the Total Food Allergy Health and Diet Guide. You can get that wherever books are sold. Is that an ebook too? Like, could somebody put that on their
iPad? It's not on ebook yet. It's just available on Amazon at bookstores wherever books are sold.
Okay, awesome. We'll post some links on besteveryou.com. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you Thursday at 1 o'clock with Luann Robinson-Hull. And then on Tuesday the 18th, we have Dr. Margaret Paul. Very exciting guests coming up. So thank you, Alexandra, for being with us. Take care, everyone, and have a beautiful day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.